We went to that whole, it was like a beautiful, pulled up with some old people, and he was like screaming at them and like slamming on their car. He's like, now the cops just pulled up. He's like, the cops just pulled up. Like, I don't know what to do. I was like, well, you should probably hang up the phone and go out there and talk to them. I was like, did you call the cops? He's like, no. You should probably go out there and talk to them and just let them know what happened. Super weird. And
yeah.
Talked to him, my brother, later this afternoon. I was like, so how did everything go? He's like, okay. He's like, I don't know. I talked to the cops for a while. He's like, I'm probably just going to go over there one of these days and kind of knock on the door and just tell them that, like,
family's home right there.
I made his brother and all this stuff. And I was like, nope. I was like, don't even approach that dude. I was steer like, clear. Just steer clear, dude. All
right, guys, what do we want to drink first?
Man, alive. I just want to drink it all.
Mango, man.
We'll bring in your segment partway through.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't want
to. Actually, we'll probably intro your segment, and then we can just kind of have notes.
I couldn't find
the
one that I really wanted to get.
What did you get?
I got the strawberry.
Strawberry.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Get the palate going.
Okay. I found out they introduced that Apple one the other day, and I couldn't find
it. What? Like for fall?
Yeah.
Andrew, I might.
I mean, there's something awful to do that, I thought. Yeah.
Over here.
You're too kind.
And I might trade
I really
you
just
seat
know,
for
I don't
a
know
more
how
comfy one so I can listen
so I really
to,
just want to, know what that
to this
like.
While we record.
You want that?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Apple Rita.
Why don't we do tour to fall?
Let's do it. I got some
turn
stories on that strawberry.
Hangover
nice.
Stories?
Perfect, then.
Not so much like me, like puking on it or anything like that, but.
Hangovers?
Some fun insider AB info on that.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at this, like, and one of these is not like the other.
So you say you got some dirt?
Oh, I got some dirt, yeah.
Sweet.
I mean, that's the dirt. Yeah.
I mean, those are the kind you're allowed to say it on the Porchcast.
Like, yeah, of course.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's funny, like, the guy that I was actually going to bring over here is one of my best friends, and he's the senior market manager for Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and like Delaware-ish for A&S Bush. And so,
he
gives me all the dirt on the that stuff. It's great.
Is it much like the malted beverages that they just add color and flavor to?
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
All
right.
Before we get started, Sam and I must do something real quick.
Oh, jeez.
I
pledge allegiance
to the flag
of
the
United
States
of
America, and to
the
republic for which it
stands,
one nation
under
God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Namaste.
Cheers.
There was no flag.
Yeah.
And I didn't take.
I had eagles on my chest.
Yeah. I love doing the Pledge of Allegiance while looking at each other.
I pledge allegiance to Tristan Chan, who lives in the United States of America.
We just stare into each other's
eyes.
Cool.
We decided, and you guys are now included if you'd like, but we decided before drinking we should always just do the
Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. And like not say anything to anybody. Like just like look at each other and be like, stand up, pledge allegiance.
That's good.
I like
it.
You guys
I
in?
Like it.
All right,
I'm
cool.
Into it.
Hell yeah.
Alright, let's get this thing rolling.
We're on.
Oh,
we even got the
pledge.
Perfect.
Yes.
That's actually fantastic.
Yeah. What it's like opening a ball game, opening the Porchcast.
Yeah, that's right. Cool.
I remember as a kid, I always wondered what witch's stand means.
what
is a witch's stand?
It's
in Wichita.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's part of Wichita.
I thought it was a witch on a stand.
All right. Well, welcome to our.
Six or seven.
It's like mid 6-7, like 6 3/4. Because we haven't actually published the Run River North one yet.
Oh, that's right.
It is on this card in this machine.
Oh. Spanish Sam is in the house tonight. But thanks for everyone who's joined us tonight. We've actually got a really special Porchcast in store. We are broadcasting from my porch.
Woo!
My being Tristan Chan. We're on Tristan Chan's porch. And kind of sticking with tradition, if you're tuning in for the first time, our shtick, if you will, is that we record from different people's porches every single time, and we are here on mine.
Haven't doubled up
And we
yet.
Haven't ever done a nighttime one yet.
You haven't done a nighttime
one. Oh, I
Tristan
missed
and I did the
nice
one at the Illegal Pete's patio
right.
A couple weeks back with the lead singer of
The epilogues.
Epilogues.
Mm. Yes. We had a late night edition of the Porchcast.
Yeah. That one was really... It was an interesting one. We kind of had to rush through it because there was no plug-in.
Yeah. We didn't know if we'd have enough battery. Oh.
And it was pretty late, too.
It was pretty late. But this actually feels kind of like a late night Porchcast.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of got that feel. We're all kind of cramped into this tight little cozy porch.
We have rain. We've got lightning.
It's about the time I start usually settling into bed with a crossword puzzle, too.
Yeah. We've got mason jars. We've got some fantastic beer. And we've also got an interesting little treat that we're going to... I think this would actually be a good time to introduce two of our guests who are on the show today with us. Yeah? All right.
Sure.
Cool. Well, we've got Andrew Emerton. Andrew, tell everyone your position.
Like I'm in right now?
Yeah.
Sitting. Currently sitting. Cross-legged. My name's Andrew. I work with Justin here at New Belgium Brewing, and I am in sales.
Cool.
I'm a sales schmuck for everything west of I-25.
Nice.
And some other parts, too.
And then we've also got fellow porch drinking writer Scott Hoffman. Scott, say hi to everybody.
Hello, folks, out there in TV land or web land, whatever you
web
call
land.
It. Sure. I'm Scott.
So we brought Scott on. He's going to do a special segment with us today. Scott, do you want to do a little intro of what your segment's about?
Sure. So last year I went to a Pearl Jam concert, and it was awesome. It was also awesomely delayed. It was about a three-hour delay midway through, and they ran out of beer. The only thing they didn't run out of was the strawberry-ita and the lime-arita. So I saw people just chugging this stuff down left and right, and they were actually enjoying it. I was like really weirded out by it because I just dismissed it outright when I heard about it. So I've been thinking since then that maybe it's just something I'm missing out on, and I eventually wanted to try it. I thought it'd make a good porch drinking post. I was kind of spitballing with Tristan the other day at the ball game, and we were saying that it might actually be a good idea just to have multiple people try it for the first, second, or third time and see what their impression is based on that giant can of beer that's in the middle of all that other great selection.
Where was that show?
It was at Wrigley Field.
And it was delayed for 3 hours?
It was delayed for 3 hours. They had an idea that it was going to be a huge storm, so they went on and they did 10 songs and went off the stage. And so we were just sitting in the ballpark with no re-entry policy. And so multiple sections were just running out of beer and people were just getting belligerent. It was terrible. So with no entertainment, people would just be drinking beer a lot faster.
Yeah.
And so I just stopped drinking because, I mean, the only option... I wasn't going to be doing that. But it was weird. Like, the perfect example I saw was this girl was obviously really into fitness. She even wore her yoga pants to a Pearl Jam concert. It was baffling to me. But she's downing these things left and right. And that's got to be like an 800-calorie can of beer right there.
Yeah.
That's not a healthy can of beer. So, you know, bravo to Budweiser on the marketing. But, 25 ounces of beer. I tried to look for the Apple Rita one I told you guys earlier. But sadly, they did not have that available yet. Mm. So that's kind of the idea for the segment. But I was just gonna, I was going to just try to, you know, I'll drink these beers so you don't have to type thing.
And I think we're gonna bring Scott on for a few more of these. He's got a few others in mind, but this is a fantastic start to our. We'll drink it so that you don't have to, or maybe we'll all decide that maybe you should drink it.
I gotta be honest, I'm kind of excited.
I've
had the Lime-A-Rita before.
Yeah,
and I think.
Straight up margarita.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it is. I don't remember if it, like, do they make them in juice boxes or like little mini cans?
I think they have mini cans.
Yeah, totally.
There's five flavors available, which I was kind of stunned by. They have a grape one, a mango one, strawberry, and a raspberry one. And I felt judged when I went up to the cash register and that's all I had in my hand.
Yeah.
Was a giant can.
Have you guys seen the stuff? It's called like Juice, and it's made by Colt 45 or something. It's like J-O-O-S-E.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Maybe that'll be on our next show.
Yeah, I mean, that might have to be, like, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's...
Juice!
Yeah, you know, it's like made by Colt 45. It's like a malt liquor, and they have, like, watermelon flavor, and they've got Snoop Dogg, like, advertising it, and I'm just like, wow, this is very much a... I guess they're targeting their audience, but to me it felt extremely racist. Yeah. You know,
just like. My favorite part is this is like a multi-series line extension. A line extension is what you call it in the
Bud Light line.
Yeah. No, I mean, so it's originally Budweiser. Bud Light.
Yeah.
Then its line extension was Bud Light. Then that line extension was Bud Light Lime. Then that line extension was Bud Light Lime Strawberry.
Right.
Like it's so diluted. It's how like, many more times can you beat this thing?
It's an identity crisis beer.
Yeah, you know, and obviously Bud Light is the number one selling beer. I don't know about in the world, but at least in the U.S. Yeah, and so it's very much like capitalizing on that brand. You know, because I feel like any kind of anything that they've released under the Budweiser, like the Budweiser Select or the Budweiser whatever, hasn't done so well. And so they're like, well, if we're going to put something out there, might as well throw the Bud Light name on it.
Because they keep on trying to do the slick branding and it's not working out. Like the Budweiser Budweiser Select or whatever it was called. I remember that had the silver cans and they're like really minimal. Yeah. It wasn't like flashy like this. And what they have, the new one, what's it called? Well, because they had the
Crown
Miller
or something.
Yeah, they had the Miller one, and then they had the Bud one. That's a Bud Crown.
Well, oh yeah, what was the Miller one called? It's kind of like the little bit sweeter, and it's like 6 or 7% alcohol or something.
Fortune.
Fortune.
Yeah. So yeah, Bud Crown or whatever came first,
and then
Bud
the Miller
Platinum, Bud Light Platinum, then that led into Bud Black Crown.
What about Bud Select? Yeah, I saw a girl walking around with a Bud Select over the weekend, and I felt like that was like discontinued 5 years ago.
I don't feel like it discontinued those beers ever. Yeah. They just, they all stick around. I mean, like probably like Argonaut will just keep them on the refrigerated shelves just until they actually sell them all out. You know, maybe that's a 5-year-old case.
I totally remember people getting Bud Select in college, and it was just like, no, this is the same thing as Bud Light or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, you think it doesn't do well because we don't drink it, but I remember last time I heard, I think Bud Select is still like an 800,000 barrel brand.
Wow.
That's almost the size of our brewery.
Maybe that should be another future segment, is buying all of those iterations of the Bud
and
brand.
And seeing if they're any different at all.
Have you guys ever seen that on tap at a bar?
Because
I can't think that I've seen one.
Not since 2009.
Yeah, like one of those specialty brands. I mean, if you're gonna buy a 6 or 7% beer, you might as well just buy
a good
one of the local craft beers.
There was another one like 10 years ago. It was like Budweiser World, Budweiser Supreme, like World,
Anheuser World Select.
World Select, yeah.
Wow, we should just start making up names for these Bud brands.
It's pretty, and they probably have been done.
It's pretty funny.
Bud Rosser Raptor.
It's pretty funny to see some of the like some of the brands. I remember seeing something recently that was like the top 20 selling beers in 1991 versus like 2000.
That'd be 13 really cool.
Or whatever. Where like, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one. It's like, you know, even 10-15 years ago, you know, Red Dog or like whatever. There was all kinds of stuff like that. I remember my buddies in high school getting Black Label, you know,
because
it was super
Black
cheap,
Label,
and it was like, I don't even know. Yeah, there's a lot of them that have kind of come and gone, even in the last decade
or so. I remember my dad was, so Coors wasn't available at one point in Illinois, and when it became available in Illinois, my dad was really excited and just started becoming a Coors guy. And then when he heard that Zima was available, I think he just, for whatever reason, wanted to try it, and that's the only time I've ever seen him dump a 12-pack out. Like, he took a sip of it.
That's awesome.
And you just started pouring every bottle subsequently out.
I can't do this. I can't do it.
So I've got...
That's amazing.
My dad's been working for Coors for a long time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and...
Actually, Justin, before you share this story...
Yeah?
I'm going to change one thing.
Hey, have you seen this
before?
All right. We're gold.
And the crazy thing is, Zima was kind of one of those, like, kind of coming back around to the Strawberita. Like, Zima was one of the very first... which is a Coors brand.
Yeah.
One of the very first to kind of move into that market of like a malt beverage that's not a
flavored
beer.
Flavored malt beverage.
Mm-hmm. And back in the day, they called them malternatives,
which is a terrible name.
Fantastic.
But, the greatest. Like, you know...
Oh, the beer industry loves play on words.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, Coors probably lost a pretty good chance to kind of capitalize on that for whatever reason.
Coors must feel tempted to bring that back.
I maintain that if they did bring it back, they'd kill it.
Yeah.
Like, just with people who...
Because everyone knows that name.
As a throwback.
As a throwback. Zima. In fact, if your dad knows of a secret archive of Zima, we should totally...
And I'm sure it's still find it during...
My guess probably doesn't, but...
Think of the most montacular 90s party that we could throw.
Dude, what if Pepsi brought back Crystal Pepsi? Anybody that's between, 28 and 35 years old, they'd pull out their rollerblades and their Crystal Pepsi and their fanny packs, and it would be a party.
And Dunkaroos and...
Dunkaroos.
Mm. Ecto Cooler.
Yeah. Well, let's transition real quick from the whole...
Let's get back on track.
We've got a beer here that is pretty spectacular, and it's not Bud Select or any of the Pokemon evolutions of Budweiser. Instead, we've got New Belgium's Tour de Fall, which is... we should just talk to you guys about it. You guys are the source of it all. Tell us a little bit more about Tour de Fall.
You guys made this.
Yeah.
The two of you.
somebody that did.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Tour de Fall?
Tour
de Fall?
Tour de Fall. We're both just like, are you going to take this one? So this is a beer that was brewed kind of in honor of our annual traveling beer carnival circus, Tour de Fat, which goes anywhere between 10 and 15 cities a year, kind of depending on the year. And so this is kind of an homage, however you would like to pronounce that, to that festival. And kind of very much the vibe and the energy. It's been, going for 14, 15 years? 2000 is when it started, I think. And so it's been around for a long time, and it's been a very...
The festival has been around.
The festival, Tour de Fat, has been around for a long time. And certainly kind of the premier market.
Tell people a little bit more about Tour de Fat, because I think we've probably got some listeners who probably don't really know.
The Tour de Fat is kind of the creation, the base of it back in the day was just this kind of tour across the country to essentially bring beer and costumes and a good time and a fun event to people in cities around the country as obviously a means of promoting our brand and our company, and also to provide a fun time on the bicycle and kind of bring awareness to bicycling in general, really, into these different cities and raise money for bicycle-specific nonprofits. The bicycle has been kind of connected to the core of the brand of New Belgium from the beginning. The company started with a bike tour of Europe and Belgium back in the late 80s, and so it's been very much connected to the culture at the brewery for a very long time, considerably before bicycling has seen this resurgence in popularity in terms of commuting and exercise and whatever else. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, it wasn't really this thing that it is kind of now. And so even in the late 90s, early 2000s, when this idea was first getting kind of cooked up, still not as huge as it is now. And so it's very much not just about the bike. There's live performances, vaudeville type of acts, sideshow acts, live music, bike parade. Everybody shows up in costume. And 10 cities this year. And very much, it's still growing. It's really fun. The one in Fort Collins gets over 20,000 people. The one here in Denver's slowly becoming one of the bigger ones that we do in the country. Probably around 15,000 people. The one in Boise this past weekend, I talked to a couple of the guys that work for the Tour de Fat, and they said it was one of those really re-energizing shows where, they put on essentially the same show 10 times a year. And they all enjoy it, but I think we've all done work that sometimes you go through the motions and other times you do it and you're just like, hell yeah, that's why I do this. And I think they had one of those shows this past weekend in Boise. I think they raised somewhere in the neighborhood of $70,000 for the nonprofit that's there in one day.
Wow.
And so, that's kind of the Tour de Fat. You see To me, I've been working there for 7 years, and it's become a part of work, and it's still a great thing. But every year, I still see somebody that's like in a costume that's over the top, or like the effort that some people put into their bikes, into building things and creating, and the creativity that it brings about, and the fun that people have. Still, it blows my mind every year, and it's a pretty rad thing to be a part of, from the inside or the outside. So, I guess that's kind of a broad view of the Tour de Fat.
Emerton, you want to tell us a little bit?
Well, yeah, so the tour happens during the fall season-ish, almost as we're going into fall. It kind of winds down in the fall season. So we came out with a beer to kind of honor Tour de Fat, called Tour de Fall. It's our new fall seasonal. It's pale ale. The pale ale style really isn't all that complicated. So there's not a whole lot behind that that style. I always like to mention, for people that like aren't super super knowledgeable on like how the hoppy beer kind of pyramid works, there's kind of the pale ales at the bottom, then the IPAs, and then the double IPAs at the top. And so pale ale stylistically falls in this realm of right around the 40 to 50 IBU range, 6% alcohol, 5% alcohol, right around there. And this guy falls right into that style guideline. Most pale ales that are on the market aren't dry hopped. A lot of the pale ales that are popular today are in existence from 15, 20 years ago, like Mirror Pond, for example, from Deschutes. Some solid examples, but dry hopping wasn't all that known about or popular back then. So the difference, I guess, kind of between this and a lot of the other pale ales that you find on the market is we dry hop this with Amarillo and Cascade. Amarillo is super peachy. Cascade's got kind of a classic citrus kick to it. And then we use chocolate rye in this one as a specialty malt. So we have our pale base malt. We have C80, which is our caramelized malt. And then chocolate rye is our specialty malt that we use in there. And that adds like this really cool sweetness, slightly almost like honey kiss, almost has like a tobacco-y thing to it, chocolatey thing going on. It's a really nice hop aroma, nice sweet kind of a back end, and then really dry finish. Very classic of almost all New Belgium beers. They will have a very clean finish because we want you to drink more. that's the whole point.
Sam and Scott, what do you guys get from this beer?
I can definitely like taste the chocolate rye. Yeah, that's a really distinct taste to it. It's a really, really good pale ale. I enjoy it. This is my first time having it. I had heard of it a while back, and I just kind of forgot that it was coming out. So this is kind of exciting to try it right now. I always love the seasonal releases from New Belgium. I was kind of curious. Is this going to be replacing their fall seasonal this year, or is this going to be in association with that?
Yeah, I mean it is replacing the fall seasonal this year. Last year we did a fall seasonal called Pump Kick, which we are doing again this year as a seasonal like overlay. We're calling it just a 2 week window. It's coming out for 2 weeks. And
nothing confusing about that.
Nothing confusing. No, it's so confusing. But basically, pumpkin beers, we tried it last year for the first time, and we quickly adjusted because people want pumpkin beers right away when they first hit the store. They want them, and then they only want them for like a week in September or like October. There's like a very, very short time span. So we're like, we're not going to waste our whole seasonal time frame on this beer that people only want during a short time period. So we're just doing a very limited release of Pump Kick, and then Tour de Fall is our main seasonal this year.
It's kind of
could
like
change next year.
Kind of like the fall equivalent of the Frambozen that we do, where it's not really a seasonal, but it comes out kind of in that Thanksgiving period, and then people buy it really heavily for a couple weeks, and then
it's gone.
And then they don't care about it after a few weeks. So
that's really interesting that you bring up that point. I think that makes for a good transition to the topic of pumpkin beers. I am actually going to be working on a piece right now for the website about the whole pumpkin beer phenomena and the whole arms race, I guess.
Why did they get so big?
You know,
pumpkins themselves?
Yeah, like in gardens. No, the beer, it seemed like...
I feel like it's a good introductory beer for some people. The folks that I've... So my wife is from Kentucky. Her brothers really never drank beer before. They come out here. The first beers they enjoyed were the slightly sour beers, not too sour, and pumpkin beers. Because pumpkin beers, I think they just have that flavor that brings people in a little bit easier.
Is it something they're familiar with? Mm.
Yeah, I mean, well, not even necessarily familiar with. It's just, it's always nice to have something, some different flavor attached to the beer, just as opposed to a straight up pale ale or a lager or something like that.
It doesn't taste like what you think beer would taste
like. So I think a lot of the people that are buying those beers may not necessarily be like the avid aficionados that we all are.
Yeah.
They're just buying the beer because they think that's the one that they always associate with Paul.
It's recognizable, yeah. But pumpkin itself doesn't taste like much.
No.
Like the pumpkin flavor, it's just a vegetable.
And who knows?
Not, like,
it's just a squash.
There's not much, it's a squash. There's not much flavor to it. So
we think pumpkin, more of like pumpkin pie.
And that's exactly what I was just going to say. Yeah. It's like more of that psychological connotation.
Yeah. It's cinnamon and it's allspice and it's nutmeg and it's all those spices that you throw in there. And that's what people latch on to
exactly.
When they drink one. That's what they expect out of one. If you made one just with pumpkin. Their pumpkin tastes terrible.
What's the it's not a beer, but it's what they drink at the pub in Harry Potter.
Butterbeer?
Oh, okay. I was trying to think if that was pumpkin or something. I'm like, maybe that makes sense. All these people coming of age who read Harry Potter.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's a point that I'm going to be making is that the pumpkin flavor itself usually isn't the main, I guess, featured flavor in pumpkin beers. It's actually a lot of that is the spices, the cloves, the cinnamon, the nutmeg that people are, I guess, more drawn to. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing that I have an issue with is the fact that pumpkin beers are now appearing in mid-July. I know that this year...
For real?
Yeah, particular, one of the major beer brands had shelves stocked in mid-July this year, and a lot of other ones have now, I mean, we're already in kind of the midst of seeing pumpkin beers appearing on shelves. Earlier today, we had a post on the website announcing that one of the better pumpkin beers on the market is actually arriving in Colorado this week. And it's a New York...
It still feels like summer.
Yeah, I know. It's a New York brewery.
I mean, I can't blame them, though. I mean, if I think Southern Tier, I think pumpkin. That's what I associate. And they pick up on the demand, and they know that demand's there. So they're gonna release it earlier and earlier every year.
They rely on it. Some breweries like Lakefront and Southern Tier.
Exactly.
Like, that's, they,
sure.
They
and honestly, like, if it's a good beer, I don't mind when they release it. I went to Upslope last month, and they had their Christmas beer on tap.
Really?
It was a Christmas in July thing. And I had it, and I was like, all right, I don't mind this.
Great Lakes does that too, yeah.
It's a really dark beer to have on a hot summer day, but I'm sitting inside in air conditioning, so I really didn't care. It's a good beer, so I don't mind having it. But there's a lot of bad pumpkin beers, though, out there that are really cloyingly sweet and not good at all. So, but yeah, I think this is kind of the trend with the demand that goes along with it. And once the demand stops, you're going to see it start to push back into September and October again.
I think it, like, it's kind of true across the board where it's like, you know, seemingly things come out earlier every year, but I think they actually do where it's like, you start seeing back to school stuff and early July
right now.
I went into Sports Authority the other day on Broadway and they've got all their puffy jackets out on the floor already, the market, like the way that the market goes is that like every year you want to try to be the first brand and the first company that has that one out first. Yeah. So that, because as soon as that one hits, that one's going to typically sell the best, whether it's in the, you know, outdoor retail section or like, you know, even if you think about the automobile industry where it's like, you know, I'm pretty sure 2015 model cars already have to be hitting floors, you know.
They plan,
like,
so far in advance.
They
plan probably 3 or 4 years in advance for the next models for those years. So.
You know, and I know I'm like, as there's more and more competition from more and more breweries, like, you're going to try to strive to be the first one to have that beer out on the market, and that means fall beer is coming out in July, August, you know?
As soon as a new seasonal hits, it makes all the other seasonals on the shelf look old, and those seasonals slow down drastically. And we see it every year because Sam Adams does. They beat everybody. They're known to being first on the shelf for seasonals. That's their game. They own the seasonal category really well. But it dogs everybody else as soon as they hit the shelf, and so we have to adjust. The hardest thing about seasonals, and I can only speak from our end of brewing, is on our scale that we brew on, we have to plan 2 years in advance before we come out with a seasonal. So Tour de Fall, we actually started planning for typically about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
In order to get the raw materials that we need for to make Tour de Fall, we had to...
Especially like the hops and whatnot.
Yeah, especially if we're using special hops and special malt's pretty predictable, like for what we can get, but hops especially, or spices and stuff like that. But we have to bid on the hops that we're going to need in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So 2 years ago, we're like, hey, we need this much Amarillo so we can use it for Tour de Fall and whatever else we're going to use it for. And then the growers grow it, and then we have to buy what we bid on. And that cycle takes 2 years.
Mm.
And so forecasting how much beer you're going to sell 2 years from now is really, really difficult.
That's really hard.
You don't
know
how many states you're going to be in. You don't know how the cycle, like how your sales are going to, how the trends are going to look and things like that. So you come out with the seasonal, when it's ready, like we stopped brewing Summer Hellas a long time ago and started focusing on this. And we're probably brewing... I bet we're about to start brewing accumulation here pretty soon.
Yeah, within the next week or two.
You get all your raw materials in, you brew it, you gotta send it out, and get it out there, and then you pray that it doesn't last too long on the floor. If it lasts too long on the floor, then you're screwed. Then you tie
another thing. That's my issue with the pumpkin beer arms race, is that you have all of these beers that are coming out in July and, you know, early August, but, and you know, the idea behind beer is, for the most part, unless it's something barrel-aged or sour that can ferment in the bottle and can stay a little bit longer and be preserved longer, you know, pumpkin beers are, and most beers are meant to be, like, consumed fresh.
Oh, yeah.
And so, if it's on the shelves in mid-July, I'm honestly not gonna want to drink a pumpkin beer in mid-July. I tried one last week just to make sure that I did, that I was true to my thinking.
I'm not having fun.
And I'm like, I'm not enjoying this.
But see, is that because you know, that's another perspective where you're just like, some people probably are really enjoying it, but you're going into it with the mindset already. You're like,
because this
is bullshit. Like, you know, it's just like,
it's a pumpkin beer that I usually would love in the fall season. But right now I'm still in that, I want saisons. I want, crisp, fresh, refreshing beers, like, you know, saisons and your Kolsch's and whatnot. I'm still not out of that period. I'm drinking tons of sours right now.
Which is great.
That's awesome. I get that. I mean, I have the mindset kind of similar where when I'm in the summer months, I want to take advantage of the summer beers that are available, mm-hmm. and I want to, like, drink the beer that's associated with the particular season.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. But I don't know that I would turn down a pumpkin beer right now. I would probably still drink it because I don't think they're so dark that it would ruin a summer day for me. It would still taste good to me.
I mean, we're all talking about first world problems here. Yeah. I don't think my days would be ruined by drinking a fantastic
there's some like really dark beers that are meant for winter that if I drank it right now, I'd be like, what the hell am I doing here? This is just like way too much for a 90 degree day.
Existential question.
Yes.
Dragon smell.
Yeah. The first time you turn on CBS on a Sunday and you hear football going on, like, that, which is not too far away.
Yeah.
You're ready for a pumpkin beer.
Yeah. Okay.
You're ready, which is not too far away. But I agree. Like, there are roots tied to seasonal, like, things, to seasonal food and seasonal beer. And it does drive me a little bit crazy when you get too far away from the roots. Including flavor, and we've kind of abused the category just as much as the next guy as far as coming out with like totally non-seasonally related things, aka Accumulation, which I love. It's our white IPA that we're going to do. Yeah, it's a great beer. White IPA in the winter. There's nothing associated with winter in that realm. You know, it's not seasonal. It's
the power of the product and the packaging and the messaging. You know, and that's what's fascinating about a lot of this stuff to me, where it's like
packaging.
Packaging and the marketing of it.
Beer's got to be good, but, you know, it doesn't...
Well, here's one argument that one of our staff, and I won't stay on this point too much longer, but one of our staff made a really good point in the fact that, you know, pumpkin beers should technically be out after fresh hopped beers. And we haven't even hit that fresh hop season yet. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's just a little bit out of place. It's a little bit too much. Now, I'm totally going to be at my friend's liquor store tomorrow to snag a pumpkin when I can, because, you know, Southern Tier is coming to Colorado for the first time distributing pumpkin in Warlock, which we announced on the website today. And, you know,
where judging, are they out of again?
They're out of Lakewood, New York. And it's a huge, huge announcement. We actually, our website broke two major announcements recently. The Southern Tier beer, two Southern Tier beers that are coming to Colorado. They're actually not going to bring any of the rest of their lineup, just those two for the season. And the other announcement, other big announcement was that New Holland out of New Holland, Michigan.
Sorry, not funny, but we all started looking at our phones right now because there's an Amber Alert going out. We all paused. It's like, who the hell is calling me right now?
That's actually the same truck my old roommate had.
Really?
Different license plate.
Just calling out again, your old roommate via podcast.
Again, not funny, but I looked at my phone with a confused look, and I looked up, and Sam and
But yeah, New Holland's actually coming to Colorado as well, so that's a pretty
legit. Yeah, I saw that yesterday. Yeah,
big announcement
a couple days ago. That's so awesome.
Also,
the pumpkin that's available now, just not to beat this too much into the ground.
Sure.
Keep in mind, pumpkin and beers now was picked last year. Pumpkins are not ripe. Yeah, true. They're not ready to be picked.
That is also a true point.
So all the pumpkin beers that are on the shelf right now, it's from the
pumpkin puree.
Yeah.
Pumpkin puree.
All right. By the way,
well,
before we move on to the next thing,
sure.
This is a pretty epic spot. We've had train horns.
It's
raining.
So
there's lightning
good.
And thunder going on.
That was a nice 25-second train horn while Tristan was talking earlier.
Yeah. Like, there's some good action going on this porch tonight.
This anyway. Would be a great one for passerbys during the day.
Yeah.
Do you get some pretty good folks walking around?
We actually don't spend too much time on this porch, which is kind of tragic, but
it's a great porch. It's got a porch swing, which we are underutilizing right now.
Yeah.
Well covered, but still lots of fresh air.
There are definitely strangers in this part of town.
So. I think there was a guy like praying at the top of his lungs as I was walking up. I thought he was talking on the phone to somebody, but then I heard him say, like, "Dear Jesus" or something. I was like, oh. Okay. Yeah.
There ain't no Bluetooth there. He's just talking to himself.
You know what's funny? I always see, actually, when I am outside and hanging out here in my neighborhood, I often see guys walking around just rapping
loud.
Just rapping out loud. And for once, I would love to just see, someone in my neighborhood just yelling like Miley Cyrus. Tunes, you know, or screaming Rebecca Black, just like.
I think you could probably make that happen.
I thought that would be the funniest.
I'll pull
thing.
Up tomorrow morning and do that for you.
All right, perfect.
So speaking of rapping, where were you heading next, Tristan?
I was gonna say we should open.
We should have more Christmas beers, like wrapping packages.
I was gonna.
Should we open this?
Let's open this.
I was concerned about it getting warm.
All
right. who knows what happens?
Speaking of wrapping. Another topic that we had on the docket this evening was the High Plains Comedy Festival coming up this weekend. And Andrew and I were kind of talking about it a little bit earlier this morning. And so I kind of went down the hole looking for YouTube videos to kind of promote the event this weekend. And I found this like 12-minute video of this comedian, Ben Kronberg, who is from Denver, lives in New York now. And I saw him at Lanny's Clock Tower for the Greater Than Social Club a couple months back. Hadn't heard of him before that. And
was he the guy who makes noises with his cell phone?
He uses his iPhone to, like...
It's crazy good.
And he
That guy is hilarious,
and he does these like raps over these these like samples that he.
I didn't know he did that. I thought he was just awkward on stage. That was his thing.
Well, he's both. He takes his like iPhone and plugs it in and starts rapping about the most crude shit. And I'm so like, excited.
It offends everyone.
I'm so excited to see it this weekend. And like this one I was watching today, he said, "Here's the church. Here's the steeple. I'll fuck you in the pussy. Let's make some more people," or something like that. And so he's like rapping it, and he's like. He's like, all right, now everybody join me. And he's like, wait a minute. If I would have realized there were going to be this many women in the audience tonight, I might have changed my stand-up routine a little bit. And like, he's trying to get these people to rap it with him, and they just weren't quite getting into it. And he's like, it's very awkward and pretty amazing. So awesome.
He should be really awkward.
I'm pretty excited to see him again at the High Plains Comedy Festival this weekend.
So let's touch on that. Tell us a little bit more about the High Plains Comedy Festival.
So that's Thursday, Friday, Saturday this weekend. Variety of venues, mostly on South Broadway, but then Saturday night's kind of the culmination of it at the McNichols Building in Civic Center Park, and. I don't know. Denver's pretty cool in the comedy world. It seems like, you know, I haven't gotten too deep into it, but like, there's some great local talent. There's some great talent from Denver that have kind of gone on to more of a national touring act and stuff like that. And then they're also bringing in some pretty major national acts for it. So it was created by the guys in the Grolics, right? Like Adam, Caden Holland, and Andy. Just this nice.
And yeah, one of those local guys is TJ Miller, who is now on the show, HBO show Silicon Valley, and he is a Denver local who's now kind of gotten pretty big. I saw him down at Bonnaroo with Scott over here. We saw him perform at Bonnaroo in the comedy tent.
I didn't realize how big he had become. I mean, he was in. I believe now he's been in 3 summer blockbusters. He was in Transformers this past year. He was in a couple last year. He's gotten very big under like kind of everyone's noses, and it's he's going to be probably like getting a TV show of his own, I'm sure, soon. But he's doing really well for himself, and I keep on seeing a lot of articles that are calling out the fact that he's from Denver, which is great.
Yeah,
I always love when that happens.
And Adam. You mentioned Adam Caden Holland. He's really fantastic. He actually has a podcast of his own too.
I haven't listened to it.
He's really. I think they actually are sponsored by True Brewing, and it's really solid. So,
okay. What's it called?
It's like His Kitchen Table or something like that.
Yep.
My
Kitchen Table. Yeah. I think. Really, really fantastic podcast, and we've got an interview with him going up on the website tomorrow. Which, when this podcast posts, it will be. Kind of in conjunction, it'll probably be in the same.
The stars will align.
Yeah, the stars will all align.
Jupiter and Saturn will line up, and they will cancel each other out.
And they will.
And Adam Caden Holland will ride towards us on a unicorn.
Yeah, actually, that's
audio unicorn.
That's the treat audio that our unicorn. Our podcasters didn't know about. I'm glad that you alluded to it. So, no, but definitely be sure to check out. Adam Caden Holland, and then also check out all the High Plains Comedy Festival activities that are happening this weekend. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I was flipping through the website. I mean, I don't know, how's the ticketing work? It looks like it was $10 per show.
Per show, $50 for the full pass.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's a steal.
It's so cheap.
Compared to,
if you can...
Comedy Works is great and everything, but... You'll pay at least $50 to go see one show at Comedy Works.
You pay $50. That's a hell of a lot of entertainment for 3 days.
TJ Miller, Pete Holmes, that Kumail, I can't always remember. He's also on.
Now, Ina Najad.
Silicon Valley.
Samir, not gonna work in here anymore. I don't remember his last name either. But I was watching some of his stuff on Conan earlier today.
He's outrageous, yeah.
That guy's hilarious.
And I'm gonna throw this out there as a little, just to get the. Rumor mill started. Dave Chappelle is performing on Sunday at Red Rocks.
Yeah.
It's his birthday on Sunday. I don't know why he would come in early for it, like say a day, but there's a bunch of national comics in town for a comedy festival. He's been known to do some pretty outlandish stuff in Denver, especially. True. I don't know. I've heard of him doing quite a few odd things in town, so
such an interesting...
The odds of him showing up early and maybe doing a show, who knows?
Spot to kind of be a hub for comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't... You know, every once in a while there's...
I think people would expect L.A. and New York.
Inexplicable things. You know, I don't... Who knows why it's Denver?
Yeah. But just got to have a couple good venues.
Yeah.
I think all the people who wanted to leave the Midwest but didn't want to leave that far away or were a little different. They
and
all
I
came
think
here.
That's one of the most... I mean, I think that's pretty true of Colorado in general, where, you know, Denver...
Has great culture.
You know, even 100, 150 years ago, Denver was still kind of that main Midwestern hub, if you will. That's like... Yeah. I mean,
if you're kind of an oddball in Kansas, go to Denver.
Yeah. Or like, find a home. Seriously,
yeah,
though, where it's like
in Chicago,
Kansas City and St. Louis. That's Kansas City and St. Louis are the first, you know, major cities to the east. Like, there's not. I mean, it's pretty much like Chicago, St. Louis, Kansas City, Denver, and then like all the West Coast cities. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's. There's not a whole hell of a lot around us for a lot of miles, you know, in terms of major, like, metropolitan areas.
And we'll like to laugh, you know. Evidence.
Exactly.
By Andrew.
Speaking of laughing, let's hear a little bit about...
No joke.
Yeah,
this is Kool-Aid.
It's tasty.
It tastes like diabetes. I don't understand how anyone can actually finish an entire can of this stuff.
Yeah, that'd be so sweet.
Yeah, that's... I mean, I can just imagine the hangover resulting from this. That's 8%.
We're gonna be so swollen.
Man, I wish you could have asked the girl in the yoga pants how she felt the next day.
How are you doing this right now? This tastes like the liquid that Jell-O is before it congeals.
Oh yeah,
I mean, I'll give it this. It tastes nothing like what I expected it to.
Hello.
Is that a spider?
It's huge.
Big spider.
I already said Scott, but I went camping this weekend and came home with this little guy
right
here.
From a spider?
I don't know what it's from. I woke up the other morning.
He's following you.
And had this massive red bump on my upper torso. And I just lifted my shirt up for you
guys.
This
might be like the last we hear from you.
I hope not.
Killed it.
We have a quick insecticide break here.
The Orchid Man is here.
This is dangerously delicious. What's the alcohol by volume?
8%.
It is 8%.
8%.
Yeah.
Holy smokes!
I love how the can warns you that it contains alcohol, just in case you were not familiar.
Yeah.
This is a dangerous 8% for children.
Yeah.
This is the liquid version of pot edibles. Yeah. If you don't realize...
I don't know if I can drink any more of this.
I don't know. I'm enjoying it.
You know, I mean, it's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not terrible. But it does taste like
it's
everything's
not terrible.
Fake.
Yeah,
it's like a liquid Jolly Rancher with some vodka poured over that top.
And I just know this is so bad for me.
It tastes like hooch.
So bad.
It tastes like the hooch that, like, college parties gave out.
So mass-produced hooch.
Mass-produced hooch that melted Jolly Ranchers into Everclear. That's what it tastes like.
Yeah.
It's ironic because Bud Light started out as, like, the light beer for Budweiser and health-conscious thing, like, play. And
I would
light
be really
beer,
curious,
like, this is low-calorie. So
I'd be curious what the actual calorie count on this thing is for a 25-ounce can.
They won't put it on there.
Does it list
the ingredients?
I was kind of curious, like, would they actually list the ingredients?
Interesting that they don't have to list the ingredients, because there's a shitload of sugar in this stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Now, I want to jump back, kind of, we were talking about High Plains Music Air Comedy Festival. We just actually experienced a few different larger festivals that have rolled through the city.
Yeah.
The last time that we really broadcast before, if we're not counting the Run River North broadcast, which will come out within the next few weeks or so, was right before UMS. So it's been a long time since we've been here. And I would be remiss to just gloss over UMS because it was such a insane
experience. I missed it, and I'm bummed I missed it. So I'm going to use this opportunity to run the restroom.
While you're in there, you should go in the fridge, the beer fridge, and grab a pump kick from last year.
All right.
Just so that we can experience what it's like to drink old pumpkin beer. No, but yeah, Sam and I, and actually Scott, actually all four of us now who are here, we were all at UMS. UMS, yeah. So I know before we, during the last episode, we actually sat down with Chris Heckman from the Epilogues, and I really talked about just how palpable the excitement was leading up to the festival, for me at least. I felt like this year was a huge year for the festival, a lot of growth. Their main stage kind of broke out into this gigantic stage.
It was a lot bigger than last year.
Yeah. They brought in some really, really large national acts, and the local acts were kind of what I was most impressed with, though.
You know, and that's why I go to UMS.
Yeah.
It's for the local stuff.
Yeah. Sure.
Even the nationals weren't all that, like, crazy. I mean, yeah. they were great. I mean, like, name recognition, though. Like, they kept it within, like, the brand of UMS itself.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I mean, that's probably the first time real estate's ever been called a headliner of a festival.
Yeah, sure. Totally.
You guys want to go around and just talk, like, list totally. A few of your favorites from what you saw? Sam?
Yeah, my very favorite thing of UMS was actually a non-UMS deal. Strings and Woods teams up with, it's for the Backyard Shindig. This is the second year in a row. It's Strings and Woods and Mountain to Sound.
Okay.
They put on these 2 days of backyard parties in a house not far off Broadway. And they just had so many quality Colorado bands that you could see in these different venues, but you could also just come to this backyard, and it was gorgeous. Like, there was little rainstorms, there's this huge garden, and if you pay $5, like, you could have bottomless.
I saw some photos with friends posting those photos from the from that backyard, from the backyard sets, and I was kicking myself for not knowing about it.
Yeah, it was really fun, and the person who I always hear about and that who I'd just never seen play before was Nick Jaina, and he's just a friend of a lot of different Denver musicians, and he's such a solid performer. I really enjoyed his set. It was simple.
Nick Jaina.
Yeah.
J-E-N-N-A?
J-A-I-N-A, I believe.
Okay.
Nice. Scott, what were some of your favorites?
Actually, one of my favorite bands was the first band I saw at UMS. This is my first UMS overall, and I was really, really, really pleased that I went. But Pageantry from Texas, they sounded like if the Walkmen and Beach House had a baby. That's what they would sound like. I mean, it wasn't like they weren't trying to rip off the sound. They were paying an homage to the sound. It was actually really, really well done. The vocals were really reminiscent of the Walkmen. The guitar usage was really reminiscent of Beach House. I enjoyed it a lot, and that was the first set I saw over the weekend. Other than that, a Denver band I saw close, Skylark and Saturday Night, Bonnie and the Beard.
Oh, yeah.
Were incredible. I had never heard of them. A friend convinced me to go. They call themselves Gypsy Punk. I didn't really get that. They kind of had a lot of different genres going on. The male lead singer kind of sounded like Tom Waits. They had a female lead singer with a beautiful voice. They had this guy playing trumpet that was right in the middle of the crowd, had a microphone up above his head, and the other hand had the trumpet. It was remarkable. It had probably the most high-energy set that I saw during the entire weekend.
That's cool.
And then, obviously, Real Estate was great. I don't know that they're really conducive for a large stage like that outdoors.
Yeah.
I would have preferred to see him indoors. But I loved their music, and it was great. Even though it wasn't really the most high energy set that you'll see, right. It was still a great set to see.
Some of my favorites. The first show that I saw during the festival was still probably my favorite of the entire festival, and that would be Science Partner, local Denver band, male lead vocal with two other female vocals as well, one of which was Kitty Crimes, this tremendous, like, hip-hop female artist.
Kitty Crimes.
Dude.
I thought you said Titty Crimes.
No, Kitty Crimes.
I think it's Kitty Crimes.
She She is so badass.
Have you seen her video?
Yeah.
Yeah, flying around in a helicopter.
What the hell video was? There's like a. I saw one of her videos recently, yeah. And I was just like, this?
Yeah. Have you ever seen Harpoon Tang? It's Kitty Crimes and Esme and Jenny from Paper Bird.
No, I've not.
And yeah, it's hilarious.
Such a good name. Such a good name.
But yeah, I mean, the band Science Partner just kills it. It's kind of like a mini Denver super band, if you will. But cool. Kind of like Scott said, it's a mixture of different genres. It's got a lot of throwback sounds to it, like kind of like a doo-wop type sound. But also, they just rock out, too. And it just blows your face off, and it's tremendous. Mike Clark and the Sugar Sounds, so they were so, so good. Arc Life was tremendous.
Hate those guys.
Sam actually shot in a really cool video of.
You shoot that one that was on the sidewalk?
Yeah, the sidewalk.
Dude. That was right outside that backyard party, actually.
So good.
Talking to Ben Soto, and was it Natalie? Yeah.
Yeah, they had so many good hand motions. Like, they were doing these sparklers that.
Yeah, it was really funny. If you haven't seen it, go check out. Where can people check it out?
Just the forum stories on Vimeo.
Okay, the forum stories on Vimeo, and check out his interview of Arc Life during the UMS. They're actually doing a really cool album release party down at Ivy Wild on Friday night, and then up here in Denver on Saturday at the Park House. And I believe they're playing somewhere on Sunday too, right?
I don't know about Sunday. Saturdays. There's so much stuff going on. So much stuff. Like, I'm paying attention to what I have to pay attention to. Yeah, I don't know what they've got going on Sunday.
If you haven't listened to Arc Life, or if you have listened to Arc Life, I mean,
their song was on our very first episode, right?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And maybe I'll try to see if I can dig that out and throw it on here again. But yeah, they're tremendous, tremendous band.
I read a quote today. So that dude, Kiernan
Robert,
that writes for Westward. He wrote something about their album, I think, and somebody commented on his post on Facebook today. It was like, the first time I listened to Arc, like, felt like I'd listened to him 1,000 times before. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's a good description.
A great compliment, you know, to, like, how quickly you can feel, you can kind of relate to their music and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were kind of one of the first bands I was introduced to here in Denver, and so worked with them both on a, you know, kind of more of a professional level, and that's made me enjoy them even more on a on a level of a band, because they're just super excited and great people.
It's funny, like, I tried to see Arc Life on Saturday night at UMS, and the only reason I didn't get in was because the line at High Dive was just so immense outside, and there was no chance I was actually going to get in to see any act that night. Yeah. I was just waiting in line for nothing at that point, so I went to see Bonnie and the Beard, and it worked out but I still have not heard Arc Life because of that. Yeah. So, I'd be curious to hear them. I'm already going to that show on Saturday, so I can't.
Well, I just found out that the album release party is actually from 2 to 7, so you could come during the day.
I could do that, then. I will do that.
Before we forget, I just want to throw out my quick favorite. Yes. I think it was also a non-sanctioned UMS event, but it was that stage on Ellsworth right there.
Yeah.
I don't know how that whole thing worked out, so I don't think it was actually a UMS stage. Anyways, Cobra Crown is playing, doing their, you know, whatever hip hop thing. I have a couple of really good friends here in that. While Cobra Khan is on stage running around, these like ninjas are coming on stage and just like setting up drums on stage. And I thought it was all part of like Cobra Khan's set. And they kept on looking back over their shoulder, like, who the hell are you? Like, get off our stage while we're like, and these guys did not care. They were just walking on stage with these giant, huge, like, I can't remember what the type of drums are, but these huge drums. So you're setting up on stage and dressed all in black, faces are completely wrapped, everything. And then Cobra Crown ends their set. All of a sudden, these guys just sit in front of the drums, like cross-legged, and just sitting there in front of the drums. Everybody thought it was part of the set. Wasn't part of the set. It gets like awkwardly long that we're standing there watching these guys just stare at their drums cross-legged, with their backs to the audience. And then this, like, voice comes on over the speakers, and it's, like, this muffled, like, stereo, like, then it cuts out. And it's gone for, like, 30 seconds, and it comes back on. It's like, and nobody can make out what the hell they're saying.
Yeah.
And that carries on and on and on. And all of a sudden, people start to gather. They're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And then the voice gets a little more consistent, and then it's on for, like, then it like turns into this like consistently long like rah 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 thing that nobody can make out. and down South Broadway, turning left onto Ellsworth, is this giant hearse thing, black hearse, with this, like, dude on top of it, looks like he's from The Matrix, he's got, like, straight up spiked hair, and there's this 30-piece marching band thing.
What?
All decked out in this, all covered, their faces are covered, everybody's dressed in black, marching band, it's just a drum marching band, but they all have these electronic speakers to their back that are connected to the voice that's been coming through over everything, and it's this flash mob called Itchio, Itchy-O. And it's a flash mob that's only appeared like a handful of times. They're based in Denver, and it's, I think it's a 35-40 person flash mob, and it was the weirdest experience ever, because this hearse like comes down Ellsworth and all of a sudden starts shooting giant flames out of the hood from this from this Matrix dude that's on stage, or on top of the hearse, like turning on like the propane or something like that. And meanwhile, there's all of this just gnarly electronic, like, vocal-y thing, drumline stuff with these giant drums and ninjas playing drums on stage going on. It was just batshit crazy. It was one of those moments where everybody's looking around like, this has got to be one of the, like, this is why I love Denver, you know? It was awesome. Just one of those moments, you know? And anyways, I heard a rumor that they're playing a show with Native Daughters, or they're appearing at a show with Native Daughters on Halloween this year. And I guess it's gonna be insane at Three Kings.
Crazy. Native Daughters are incredible too.
Yeah, so they
the artist, the art museum, whatever that's called on Broadway. I saw them on Thursday night.
They're really good. They're so good.
Yeah.
Double drummer things.
Yeah. Perfect. Another really stellar band was a band called Residual Kid, and it was these three, like, I think it was two 14-year-olds and a 12-year-old from Austin, Texas. And these guys just fucking destroy, like, in terms of rock and roll. They're just, like, they crush it. And they're so young, but, you know, people were saying, like, oh, man, they're so good for their age. No, fuck that.
It's good.
They're just fucking good. And they just, they kill it.
They're good last year, too, for UMass.
And so it's going to be interesting to see, like, as they kind of grow, how their music develops. But it's just tremendous, tremendous sound.
Sam, you can teach somebody how to play music.
I didn't get to go to that one, no.
You can't teach them.
You make it out to UMass, though.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Rock musicians. Yeah, sure. Like, they're good.
Yeah, I mean, they were actually, I think, the best band in terms of handling the main stage.
Totally.
I felt that. I mean, I thought
Gardens and Via were pretty good.
I mean, like, the other bands, I felt they packed the main stage with a lot of quieter acts.
Yeah.
And that.
Yeah, they kind of got lost on that.
They did. That's got really lost because there was nothing for that sound to, like, you know, buff it off of on the sides. So it just kind of, like, filtered out. And if you're standing, like, 50 feet in front of the stage, you're like, it's the quietest concert I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, and I even showed up and I wanted to listen. And but then I was like, this is just not holding me, and I'd way rather go talk to that person who, like, we're kind of friends, and this is a great time to get to know them better, you know?
Yeah, it's like, so, we went to see Blonde Redhead, and I think my friends and I just ended up having, like, just an awesome conversation, like, in the back, because we couldn't pay attention to what was going on stage, because it was just so quiet, and it was so subdued, it didn't feel right for a main stage setup, but...
I thought Cayucas was the same way. Like, they should be such a fun, like, beachy band, but that their most popular song they, I think, might have led with, and it's still, they just kind of look like they were going through the motions.
Yeah.
It's really, really sad.
As opposed to who headlined last year?
It was
Lord Huron. Yeah, and they did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
That was tremendous.
I'd seen them right when their album came out.
Yeah.
And it was at the Larimer Lounge. And it was a much smaller, it was still a really crowded show, but they fit the Larimer Lounge stage at that time, and it was really cool to see them last year at UMS, and they had grown. Like, you could tell they started to get used to these bigger stages.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I was expecting from the main stage this year, but it just didn't really happen.
So, what do we guys think about this pumpkin?
It's aged out, for sure, but
yeah.
I drank mine already.
It's gone.
You know, I still have a bottle of our original Pump Cake. So the original beer Pump Cake was Lips of Faith beer that we came out with that was a collaboration with Elysian up in Washington. And yeah. It was a sour, we blended a sour beer with a pumpkin cranberry
That's
beer.
That's still my favorite and beer.
It was so good. And I saw a bottle at home, and I'm guessing it's pretty aged out too, but.
I keep on here. What's it called? Falling Rock for the last 2 years has had
It was just Kick.
They've had that on draft the last 2 years. They'll just like pick a random night and they'll have it on draft. And I always miss it. I'm always crushed by that because that's still.
I had it once with you, I think, and it was phenomenal.
It was
Kick and Clutch came out around the same time, and they're so good.
I wouldn't be too bummed out. I've had it recently too. It's just it
doesn't hold up.
Years old.
Yeah,
it's pretty oxidized.
It's still, just to see it on tap would make me happy.
All right. Well, as we finish up this pump cake, I think it's time to bust out the big guy.
Yeah, bust it. Yeah.